Welcome to the Man Cave Confidential Podcast. Sit back, enjoy yourself, grab a frosty brew. The show starts now.
Let the enlightenment begin.
This is like guerrilla radio. Right into it. No intro, no nothing. I am Darren O'Neill. You are FJ Shark. Good morning, everybody.
Guerrilla podcasting.
Right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending where you are. Guerrilla podcasting taking over the airwaves of the Man Cave Confidential program, where we'll be talking about things guys will hopefully be interested in. And ladies, if you're listening, you might learn some of the deep, dark, dirty secrets that men just will probably not tell you.
And if you're a woman, quit calling 911 because your pizza sauce is not ready.
Right. Well, this isn't the first time this happened. And if you're listening to this, you know, nowhere near when this was recorded, it's probably happened again recently. Because it seems like each and every week, there's some Yahoo somewhere that has a problem with a fast food order that dials 911. I'm like, to them, I guess this qualifies as an emergency.
Yes.
Of epic proportions.
Fix my sauce.
To where the police need to be called. Here's a little tip for you people out there. If somebody steals your car, call the police. If somebody pulls a gun on you, call the police. If Ronald McDonald gets your order wrong, ask for a replacement, and if that doesn't help, call corporate McDonald's. Do not call the police.
Right.
Because who is going to get arrested in that case, which I think is what happened in this case, too, if you're going to go to jail.
Yes, you got a fine for abusing the emergency protection system, whatever that is. So whatever that's qualified under, but she got a nice fine for calling 911 because her sauce tasted bad and she didn't want marinara sauce on her Subway pizza.
Is there such a thing as a, okay, I understand, you know, you've got the California Pizza Kitchen, you have other gourmet style pizzas, but, you know, overall pizza has some kind of red sauce on it.
Yeah.
I mean, by default, that's a pizza. There's a red sauce. Now, this is what she had a problem with.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's probably one of those people that didn't want any cheese on the pizza either because she's, you know, really watching what she's eating. So I can't have any cheese, and I'm going to complain about the sauce, and the dough's just not right. Why are you here? Why are you eating pizza then?
Why are you eating pizza at Subway? I mean, Subway. I love their sub sandwiches. But if I'm like walking down the street and I'm like, hey, I've got a hankering for pizza, you know where I'm going to go? Pizza place. I'm not going to Subway.
Well, yesterday we went to Subway, and I actually tried it. It was good. I liked it. But, again, I didn't go there because of it. I went there because I saw it up on the board and said, oh, I'll try that.
And you're like, why are you doing this, Subway? I mean, okay, it's tasty. That was fine. But then it's like, okay, so when the pizza place, when Domino's next door starts going, we got turkey subs, you know, they're going to be like, oh, geez, we didn't think of that.
Are they still serving breakfast? I haven't heard anything about that. Remember they had this big thing like a couple summers ago, we're going to start serving breakfast, and they were handing out those egg-type flatbread sandwiches for free just to get you hooked on them?
Yeah, I think Subway is still doing breakfast. I've never actually woken up early enough to go to a Subway for breakfast, but hey.
Right, or to make those decisions. The guy says, well, what do you want on it? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, you could have, you know, do you want lettuce? Do you want this? Do you want that? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's too early to make decisions.
Well, isn't that the problem with Subway overall? Yeah. I mean, shouldn't, you know, they should have just like a couple of different packs, you know, kind of like the, you know, your basics, you know, your lettuce, tomato, you know, maybe some pickles. Like, so maybe that should be called the normal, the regular topping. Maybe there's, you know, but there's, you shouldn't have to sit there when somebody's like, right. And usually it's like a 16-year-old boy or girl, and it's like, what would you like in your sandwich? And it's like, I don't know. And right. You're looking down, and there's like 14,000 different ingredients, and you're like, I'll take that and that. Right. And what's that again? Yeah, I'll try some of that.
Thing.
Yeah, I mean, it would be much easier if there was just a regular, you know, that's why I like there's a company around here which is similar to Five Guys Burgers, and it's called Meatheads. Mm-hmm. And you've got the usual all your toppings kind of stuff that you can pick from, but they have special hamburgers that you can have, like a Reuben. So it's basically a hamburger, but instead of on a bun, it's on rye, and they do put the sauerkraut and the Thousand Island, and so it tastes like a Reuben. It's like the meat is irrelevant once you put all the toppings on a Reuben and put it on rye, which is funny because it's like, okay, it pretty much tastes like a Reuben. You're not eating right. corned beef. You're eating a, you know, ground beef. Totally right. different things. Still tastes about the same. But right. see, I like that because you can just go, that's what I want. You right. don't have to go down the list of 14 different things. And then, you know, you got people like my wife who figure you're going to get more if you put every topping on the sandwich.
Right. Well, you don't know how many times I've said everything but onions. And when they hear onions, they grab the onions first. I'm like, no, I said no onions. Yeah, you want extra?
Uh-huh. Well, see, or what I, it's like for me, it's like I like pickles. So it's like, well, I would rather go than like, give me like three times the pickles. If I can have like everything, I'd rather just have like, you know, little lettuce, mayo, and like mustard and like three times the pickles and forget about the rest of that crap. Definitely don't put black olives on that.
Right.
That would just be easier. Subway, make it easier. And for these people that are calling 911, I just have to wonder, what is the mental state of somebody? What is the intelligence quotient of somebody who sits there sober and makes the decision that their Subway order wasn't right two times, and that is qualifying for... Hello, 911.
I'd like to be the dispatcher on that call. You just handled somebody getting bleeding to death, somebody having a heart attack, some kid that's lost, somebody trying to pull kids into a white van by offering them candy, and then, oh, hold on a second. Hi, I don't like my sauce.
Right. Hey, well, then keep your sauce out of her eye. Now, here's the thing, and it's a laughing matter, sure. But say you're in an area where... you are very stretched because 911 calls, you know, unlike any other place you call now where it's like press 1 for English, press 2 for Espanol, and wait for, it's like, you know, and you talk to a computer the whole time. 911, you don't talk to a computer. You need to talk to a real person. And the thing is, if you're calling 911 a split second to before somebody calling about, say, you know, somebody having a heart attack, and you called a split second before to complain about Subway not making your sauce correctly.
Right.
You could have just cost somebody their life.
Yep.
And this is why it's a serious thing. And this, but this is again, and I know it seems like we talk about this all the time, but this is again a case of people not understanding the simple concept of you are not alone in the world, and the world does not revolve around you, and it's time to stop being a narcissistic fucktard.
Not everybody gets a trophy.
Right, and not everybody gets their sauce right. But it's your sauce on a fucking sandwich. You don't right. call the police.
Right. Well, yeah, well, maybe 911 should have that press one. If you're complaining about sauce, condiments, or any other type of food item, press one, and then they just get put on, like, eternal hold.
Right, we're never coming back. If this is a complaint about Subway, McDonald's, or the like.
You know, press one for fast food, then takes them another menu. Press one for McDonald's, two for Taco Bell. It gives them all these choices for like a half an hour, completely wastes their time.
Right.
For like 30 to 60 minutes, and they finally realize it, and then it like sounds like it's hanging up, and it repeats.
Well,
press one. Yeah.
But 98% of the world understands you don't call 911 for this.
Right.
I want to do a study on the 2% that does.
Found only in America, probably.
And I want to know how they get through their daily lives.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, oh, gee, the water coming out of my tap is too cold. I'm going to call 911.
Yeah.
It's like, why? It's like, right. it's not an emergency.
Right.
You know, I mean, the police in the area here, I mean, they'll even tell you, you know, usually if it's a non-emergency kind of a call, it's like, hey, if you... you know, if you wake up in the morning and there's, you know, toilet paper all over your house, you could just call the normal police number. I mean, you don't need to call 911. Let's not, you know, let's not abuse that service. So I just want to know. I want to know more about the people and what their daily lives are. Like this woman that called 911 because the sauce wasn't correct. She didn't like the sauce on her Subway pizza. I want to know what her job is. Right. I want to know how she can function in normal society. Because if somebody's calling 911 because their sandwich isn't right, how do you work, say, you know, at a toy store or a sporting goods store? I mean, because something's going to go horribly wrong at some point. You know, I see her working like the register at Toys R Us and somebody coming up and saying, you know, yeah, I'd like to use this coupon. And they're like, no, yes, I want to use this coupon. 911. I mean, what don't right. you, if the sauce on your sandwich makes you call 911, how many other things in your day-to-day life, it's like you must call 911 for everything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, here's the worst possible case scenario. Say you even tried another sandwich. You go to Starbucks, they make your coffee wrong. You say, this doesn't taste right. They make you another one. Subway makes you another sandwich. Here's the thought. If it after that second one, leave.
Right.
You know, just okay. Take the frickin' loss of the $4 and leave.
Right. Or ask for your money back. I mean, I don't know if that was, you know, if that was a question or not. You know, it just drives me nuts when you see this kind of stuff, because it's become a weekly occurrence to where it's on the news that I notice it, which means it has to be nearly a daily occurrence somewhere in this country. Somebody's calling 911 for something completely irrelevant to what 911 was invented for.
Right. Well, I mean, God bless retail, but, you know, mostly it's a lot of younger kids and, you know, they don't show up on time, or they, you know, don't show up at all, or whatever they're doing. And
that was why I preferred to do it. Or you hid. When I worked at Circuit City, I mean, I'm not saying this maybe is a reason why they went bankrupt, but we used to hide. I mean, that was pretty much it. Well, it wasn't all the time. We do, you know, although you hid sometimes in, you know, like the Christmas rush, just because you needed a break. But it was the slow times when you hid, because they had the genius way of doing your commission where every 2 weeks was a pay period. And if you made enough money, you'd be over, you'd be on commission. So it's like you were guaranteed X amount of dollars per hour. So when it came around to like Christmas time, right, it was beautiful because you would sell a ton of stuff. You'd make a ton of money. So you wanted to be out on the floor in the hopes you would sell that next set of Bose speakers or whatever it was you were selling. Now, during the summer, when like no customers show up and you're through like the first 3, 4, 5 days, even the first week of your pay period, and you look at the math and go, yeah, you know, unless Christmas is tomorrow, we're not going to make commission, which meant you knew you were on your hourly rate for that next 7 days or 10 days, whatever it was.
Right.
If you could hide during the day and not have to deal with customers, you still got paid the same amount of money as if you actually had to deal with customers.
Right.
So, you know, I guess it's harder at Subway. You know, you can't really hide from your customers. But we used to – I mean, there was a guy that would come in like every week to Circuit City, flyer in hand. That was always how you knew it was a problem customer in the first place.
Right.
Because we talked about this on the show at some point. But you would get yelled at working at Circuit City if you sold anything in the flyer, because the stuff in the flyer had no margins. There were occasionally times – that they were actually losing money on that receiver that they put into the paper for $199, because they thought, if we just, you know, this is genius in advertising, right? Well, we're going to put something in the paper for $199. It costs us $215 to buy it. That's going to get somebody in the door because the price is so low, but we don't want you to sell that to them. We want you to talk them up to the $400 receiver that we're making money on. But somebody's coming in with the paper going, you know, it's one thing if somebody walks into your store, and I work the audio department mainly. So it's a lot easier if somebody walks into an audio department at a store like that and says, I'm looking for a receiver. Can you help me? Because then you can do the tap dance. You can do the floor show. You can explain to them why this cheapo receiver is going to sound like crap, and why this mega expensive receiver is going to sound awesome, and why they should be somewhere in the middle unless they're a crazy audiophile. But you're still going to step them up enough to where you're selling a piece to where you're making money. That can be done when somebody walks in and says, I need a receiver, please help me. When somebody shows up with a colorful piece of paper in their hand with a picture of the receiver that you put in the ad with the price that you put in the ad and says, I want one of these.
Right.
It becomes a much harder upsell.
Right. Well, yeah, because once you start educating people on what's available, they don't want to go they don't want to walk out being a cheapskate, and they don't want to walk out with like the most expensive thing unless they're, you know, going to cater their ego. So they're going to be right in the middle. It's going to be that much more easier when you show them the range.
Right. But see, when somebody walks in and says, I want this one, how do you talk? How do you upsell them there? I mean, this is the – and we had this conversation multiple times with Circuit City managers who obviously probably hated me at come a certain point. But it's like there's no legitimate, non-scammy, non-skeevy way to talk somebody up from, I want one of these, except to go, well, you know that's total shit, right? Because once somebody says, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, Shark, give me one of these. Well, how do you sell them on the better one? Yeah, I mean, how do you right. go, well, wouldn't you want one of these instead?
Right.
You know, because then people end up asking. We've had, you know, had people, customers ask that question then. Well, if this one is so bad, why do you put it in the ad? And it's kind of like, do you need me to explain marketing 101 to you on how big companies do business? They put it in the ad to get numbskulls like you in the door thinking they can buy a receiver, you know, for $100.
Right. Or the grocery store, you know, typical loses money on eggs to get you in the door to buy something else. You know, but if you're going to go grocery shopping, you're going to buy a lot more things. It's not going to be just, you know, I'm here for this only. So the only way to do is to show them, let them hear the quality between the two.
Right. And, you know, eggs are cheap, man. We just bought, and it's like, this is always makes me, you go into a place, and, you know, you buy like an omelet and you pay for it, your breakfast, and you have no problem paying like, you know, $7.99, $8.99, whatever it is. And then you go to Costco and you buy 3 dozen eggs for like $4 and you go, you know, I bet you there's not 3 dozen eggs actually in that omelet. Usually there's like three. It's like, well, there's a nice markup if you want to open up a breakfast place.
But you see, with the internet, though, isn't that one of the reasons, you know, people get on the internet, get on Yelp and start comparing notes going, Circuit City is doing bait and switch. Well, word gets around, you know, if it's just, you know, back in the 70s or something, somebody pulled that, you'd be like, oh, I just got a better deal. The salesman was looking out for me. That's how you walked out feeling good about yourself.
Right. And while Circuit City would play the haggling game to a certain point, obviously not in the stuff that was in the paper because they weren't making any money at it. But if you knew what you were doing when you walked into a Circuit City and you were buying one of the products that you knew had margin on it, you knew you could get the store management to do something for you to take that home with you. And it was interesting at the time when Circuit City first came out, between them and Best Buy, there was that big, you know, that was that the big fight going on was Best Buy would be advertising like, hey, we don't use commission salespeople. And that sold a lot of simpletons. You know, people were like, hey, yeah, I don't want to go to that Circuit City where people are making money off of me. Whoa, that's stupid.
Yeah, well, I don't want a business to make money off of me, said all the depression babies everywhere.
Right. And here's the thing. When somebody works at Best Buy and they're not making money, whether you buy something or not, do you know how much they really want to help you? None. Because they're not making any money depending on what you buy.
Right.
You know, for them, if you ask them a question and walk away, it's best case scenario because they could go back to doing whatever else they wanted. You know, and that was the funny thing. It's like at Circuit City, for you to make money being on commission, you actually had to know your product.
Right. Well, yeah, I've been asked 3 times, do I need help with anything on my way to the section I'm trying to get to? But when I get to the section, I can't find anybody. It's like I'm going to drag the other people with me.
Right, you bring them along, which was one of the reasons Circuit City went downhill fast as they didn't train people interdepartmentally. So say somebody didn't show up in the audio department. Well, they would like send somebody over from the video department to handle that, and they had no idea what anything was.
Or
vice versa. It's like, you know, hey, I knew enough about TVs, but if you don't know the TVs that are on your floor, if you don't know your product, it is really hard to help a customer. I mean, I've worked in different types of retail. I've sold, you know, carpet and flooring, and you know, if you don't know your product, it all looks the same.
Right.
I mean, you look at a bunch of carpet, you walk into a carpet store, and that's why I'm always pretty much guaranteed, you know, that my feeling is that people treat, you know, buying carpet like they do buying a car, because you can look at, you know, two or three different products and not visibly be able to tell which one's better than the other.
Right.
You know, so it's one of these things where you're really relying on the salespeople to be honest, and the people measuring to be honest, which a lot of these, let's see, how to avoid liable. I hear that a lot of these big companies that advertise, say, on TV with funny little cartoon characters and different little slogans for their phone number, they don't always measure correctly.
Right.
And I had heard a story from one of my mom's friends whose boyfriend was buying carpet. And he called one of these big places. Let's just say it was something that sounded like having a, where you'd have a big, you know, castle. You know, that's mm-hmm. Well, the guy came in the door with like literally two sample boards.
Right.
And it was like, well, here's our carpet. And it's kind of like, do you not have anything else? Well, I've got some other stuff in the car. I mean, do you really want me to go out and get it? Yes. You know, it's like, here's another little trick. So, where, you know, if somebody comes and tries to sell you something and they give you like two choices, you don't really have any choices.
Right.
You know, so it's an interesting thing to me, because we've studied this, and you've worked in retail, and you've worked in sales of different sorts as well, with the you know, the brokerage stuff, and
right.
And it's interesting what people will, you know, the concepts used to sell people aren't always the most honest. Is that a good way to say it? I mean,
do you want the blue or the green? Either way, you've made your decision to buy.
Right. Well, that's also the you know, the nice thing about it. And it's like, I can be a dick. I mean, the people who've listened to any of the shows probably realize that already. But I mean, I went one time to buy a car, and we sat there, and the guy, I mean, I can tell he was the smooth, you know, salesman, and we knew what we wanted, and we knew the price that we wanted, and we agreed upon, you know, whatever the price was on the Chevy that we were looking at. And, you know, he came back with all the paperwork, and it was $50 off, which, granted, on however many thousands, you know, the 20-something thousand dollars the car was, you know, it was $50 off. And I was like, ooh. Well, no, that's not what you said. You know, just get that fixed. Pop that $50 off there. And he's like, you're going to walk over $50? I'm like, see you later. You know, I mean, when you tell me something, I expect you to come through with it.
Right.
You know, and I walked with the price that he didn't want to give me over the $50. It was the easiest sale the Chevy dealer down the street ever got, because I walked in and said, look, I was just dealing with these assholes up at the other Chevy dealership. Here's the car I want. Here's what I want on it. Here's the price I want to pay. The guy went, okay, come over here. Let me look at what we got here. Okay.
Exactly. My grandfather would do the same thing and be like, let's go get some popcorn and watch the show.
Yeah. Sold.
Right. And the other thing was that dealer prep thing, or, you know, floor mats or something, they try and hit you with like $250 for dealer prep and another $50 for floor mats or something. He'd go, no, take that off. I'm not paying for the Christmas party.
Right. I don't want all the bells and whistles. So, yeah, be careful when you're dealing with that. And if somebody doesn't give you the price you want, you know, don't call 911.
Right.
I still want to know who calls 911 on Subway.
Right.
I mean, really, I want to know. I mean, because I don't know anybody that would do that. I don't think you know anybody that would do that. It would have to be somebody so completely and utterly out of their mind and out of touch with reality.
Well, I mean, again, if that's your biggest joy of the day is going to Subway to get, or wherever, to get your sandwich made, and that means so much to you that it's, by taking it away, is going to upset you so much. Well, that's all you got to be happy about, is getting a sandwich? I mean, because by taking it away, it must upset you that much, so therefore it must have meant the world to you.
I need my sandwich. I need my sandwich. I need my sandwich now.
you know, or the people that I used to have a Camaro and then I had a Mustang. And I don't speed, believe it or not. People make fun of me because I don't speed.
So you buy the cars that could go really fast.
Yes.
In order to drive them slowly.
Yes. And people go, you know, you'd be amazed how many people pull up like, and they fly off the line. It's like, oh, I. And then they're like, then they slow down because they're like, oh my God, the guy must know there's a cop around the corner.
See, on the other hand, I have like a 96 Camaro and I will blow anybody off the line when I, you know, am feeling the mood. And, you know, if it has the weather has to be nice, music has to be up, it, you know, windows have to be down. But yeah, I'm all for this. When you say you don't speed, I mean, you're not saying that you've never gone over the speed limit.
When I did, I was in a train of cars going down Southwest Highway. I was going 45 in a 40, and I was the last car in the train, and I got picked up by the cop.
Lucky you.
Yeah, thank you. But no, the point is that.
So you've okay. What's the fastest you have gone in a vehicle that you've been driving?
What's the fastest over the limit?
Well, what's
not more than five miles an hour over the speed limit.
Wow.
Unless it's on the expressway, then you're just trying to keep up with traffic.
Okay.
I'm talking about you're the front, you know, if I have to go 65 or something on the expressway when everybody else is doing 65, that's fine. I'm not standing out. I'm not going to be the guy standing out is what I'm saying.
So you've never eclipsed 100 miles an hour on an expressway?
No.
I have.
Yeah.
A few times. My favorite story was when I showed up for work one morning when I was working at, like I said, I sold carpets. I showed up to a flooring store and it turns out they were doing a job, a commercial job that day. And you know, the for any like office buildings and stuff like that, you know, the base that, you know, usually it's like it looks like a brown vinyl kind of thing that goes along the sideboards.
Right.
To finish it off, you know, it's called vinyl base. Well, they didn't order that. And they were doing the job that day. So this was, you know, in the northern suburbs of Chicago. They were doing the job that day, which the job was actually more towards the southern suburbs of Chicago. And the company that distributes the base just happened to be out of Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Oh.
Which is north of Milwaukee. I show up for work, 9 o'clock in the morning, north suburbs of Chicago. The one guy and the boss are standing out front. We need you to go pick up some bass.
God.
I'm like, okay, where am I picking up the bass? Sheboygan. I'm like, where? Sheboygan, Wisconsin. The boss throws me the keys to his brand new Lincoln Town Car, which was maybe like a month old.
Wow.
Drive this. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, that car, yeah, it was.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I mean, it was literally that car. You could not tell how fast you were going. And at one point on the way back, I had the speedometer just set. It was like basically cruising along at like 102 miles an hour. And I'm coming up, and there's really no traffic at this particular point on this particular stretch of highway headed back towards Chicago. And I could see that I'm coming up to another Lincoln Town Car in the lane just to the right of me. And I'm clipping along, like I said, just at 100, a little bit over. This Lincoln Town Car was filled with four gray hairs, you know, four old people who were really doing a fairly good job cruising along at like 75 or 80. And I looked over and they looked over at me for that brief second. It was like, what the hell is that? Because it's like, you're, you know, hey, I mean, I can see that. You're cruising along. You're like, I'm going 80 miles an hour. I'm going fast. And all of a sudden, like,
yeah, but if you're doing that, it's like maybe they think it was you're a government car. You're an emergency. Right. It's an emergency. Let me through.
It's a Lincoln Town Car, and you can drive fast in those.
Right.
You know, you don't really have the off-the-line speed, but I tell you, as far as being in a car, in my Camaro, if you're going 100 miles an hour, which I've done that. I remember doing that with a buddy from Circuit City as we were playing with was a Porsche or a Ferrari. We were going north on 294 here in Chicago. And we were just keeping up with this guy. This guy was doing like 100 miles an hour. We're just like, okay, may as well follow him because he's going to be the one getting a ticket, you hope.
Yeah.
You know, so we were kind of doing that. But, in, you know, in the Camaro, when you're doing 100 miles an hour, I mean, you feel like you're in a race car. You're getting, you know, right. The car's like the Lincoln Town Car, man. I could have just drifted off to sleep doing 100 miles an hour. It's just like smooth, like glass. You don't feel the road beneath you at all. It really does. They call it a boat. Doesn't even feel like you're on land anymore.
Oh, God.
I can't believe you've never. I mean, I don't. You know, I wouldn't do it to be in a. You know, and I hate people that will be speeding and going in and out like during traffic because right, you're gonna eventually fuck up and you're gonna ruin somebody's day.
Right.
But on a nice wide open. I mean, I drove myself down to a Nashville once in the Camaro, and it's like, you know what? When there's just like wide open roads with nobody on it, that's when it's time to put that pedal down and see what the vehicle can do. We need to get you to a. We need to get you out in one of those things at the speedway,
right
out here in Joliet. We can get. Yeah. I want to get you out on the track. If you've never gone over
like demolition derby in July.
Well, you don't want to wreck your car. We want to take you. I don't think so anyway, unless you're looking for the insurance. We need to get you down into one of these, like the Richard Petty or Dale Jarrett or Rusty. I think every driver that retires opens up a racing school.
Yeah,
and they bring cars out here, you know, a couple of times a year. And you pay a few $100, but then you get behind the wheel and you drive around the track. And, I mean, in Chicago here, I think they let people get up to like 155, 160 miles an hour in the race cars.
Well, yeah, that lady was 102 years old. For her 102nd birthday, she went and did that, I think, yesterday or within the last few days. And he had it up to 180 miles an hour. And she goes, oh, I really wanted to go 200. I'm surprised she didn't call 911.
But see, no, for the speeds I'm talking about, you're driving.
Right.
They give you a little class, and you know the ride along. We did that in when the Walt Disney Raceway opened. We were down there, maybe like 95. Maybe it was for our honeymoon, and we went down there. It was the Richard Petty School, and that's where you get into the passenger seat and you drive along with a professional driver.
Right.
And you know, that was the first. I mean, you always knew from like watching racing that there were G forces going on in the car, but you right. have no idea until you actually do this. I mean, it's like it's not subtle. You know, when this guy's coming off the pit lane and he's speeding up and getting up into the banking, I mean, it's like it takes every ounce of energy you have to keep your head straight up.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, I can't even imagine. You'd have to be in decent shape, and obviously you do it enough, you build up the muscles. But for somebody that had never done that, being in the car, it's like it is enough of a workout just being in the car for a couple of laps.
Right.
The amount of G-forces that are there, it's scary. So it's like, I can't even imagine when these people go up and it's like, hey, you want to go up with the Blue Angels? It's like, oh, yeah, that seems like it would be really awesome until it's like, blackout. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the where I was going with that, with off the line and tying it to the Taco Bell Subway people who are, you know, moaning, if you have to race me at the line and you feel really, you know, that makes your day and it's the only time of the day that you're going to feel like a winner, then I'm happy to give you that because
you're a winner.
You seem to need it. So it's the people who just lost the race, you know, for the first 50 feet from the last stoplight before they came to Subway. Those are the ones who are calling 911 because I just lost the race down Pulaski and Southwest Highway or wherever. And now I'm going to call 911 because now I got two things that are, you know, that are upsetting me today.
It's more like I was illegally drag racing and I lost. I should probably hang up now.
You are listening to the Man Cave Confidential podcast.
But you know, there are people that don't realize that. I mean, the other thing you hear every once in a while, you know, is like the guy that's dealing pot out on the street when he gets robbed calls a cop.
Right.
Yeah, they stole my weed. And the cop's kind of like, what now?
Yeah.
Now you got my attention because I'm taking you to jail.
Or the guy that wanted to rob the bank and they said, well, I think it was going to rob the 7-Eleven or somewhere. And they said, well, the Brinks truck, you know, or somebody they're supposed to like get a shipment of money in. He goes, oh, they didn't come yet. He leaves his number and says, call me when they get here.
Dumbest criminal of the week.
But regarding driving down an open stretch of road, I had a foreman at a plastics company I used to work with. He told a story that he was driving his big boat 1972 Cadillac one time.
Nice.
And he fell asleep at the wheel, woke
Not
up
nice.
In a cornfield with the cruise control still on 65.
I think we call that maneuver the Carlton Fisk. I'm not sure.
And if that wasn't enough, he says, yeah, I woke up with all this corn everywhere. And I'm like, so you stopped? He goes, oh, no, I still had the cruise control on 65. And then he says, I just have to ease it back on the road. Like, ease it back on the road. How about hitting the brakes? This fucker's coming out at 65 miles an hour back on it from a cornfield.
Comes jumping out of the cornfield. Yeah, that's why you're driving so slow. You think somebody's about to pop out of that cornfield.
I just want to ease it back on the road.
Oh, man. Traffic court. You know, you can only imagine how much fun you could have hanging out in traffic court.
Or how about if he was jumping the road? Like, say the cornfield ended and there was a road that split it. So he's
right.
coming out. He jumps the road, goes to the next cornfield.
Yeah.
All right.
Be a little more careful. We don't condone falling asleep behind the wheel. Probably not the safest thing to do.
Get enough sleep.
Yeah. Get enough sleep. I actually had 8 hours last night. I'm happy. It's one of the rare times. And guys, I mean, okay, let's. If you want to talk about something to bitch about, what's this getting up like three times a night to pee? I mean, really? Doesn't happen to my wife. I mean, it's no problem. She could drink like three fucking big gulps usually right before bed. No problem. If I drink anything after like 6 o'clock, fucked. You know, I mean, no problem. Fuck, you're going to be getting up. But you understand that at some point, but then it's like, well, I'm thirsty. I mean, but now there are times, you know, again, it's men of a certain age, I suppose. I don't remember having that problem, you know, in high school or college.
Right.
But it's like, you know, now it's kind of like you sit there and you have that, like, debate with yourself. When you're sitting around, it's like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, you're watching TV, a ball game, watching some movies, and you're like, I am really thirsty.
Yeah.
But then there's that little part of the voice going, you want to get up at 3 in the morning? Well, no, but...
Or you wake up at 3 in the morning, you're trying to convince yourself, can I fall back asleep?
See, I can. I don't have that problem. So, I mean, I guess that's good. But it's like, and it just, you don't want, it's just like, it's an ordeal.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't want to get up. I mean, it has made it a lot easier, I'll tell you. Once, and everybody should have these, the little LED tap lights.
Okay,
you know,
right.
I keep one of those on the nightstand now because otherwise it's dark.
Yeah.
And it's only so much fun trying to, like, you know, find your way through a darkened room when you're half asleep until you, like, kick the, you know, dresser enough times.
Right.
So those little lights are lifesavers. At least you can pop that on. You could find your way to the bathroom and back without having to, you know, fall down the stairs or anything, you know, anything bad happening like that. I'm telling you, I mean, if there's a device somewhere, somebody should have just invent a little thing. You attach it at night. If you gotta pee, just go. No muss, no fuss. Never have, you get 8 hours of sleep guaranteed.
Well, speaking of sleep, I thought Best Buy started selling mattresses because I saw a 70-inch TV there in the box, and it was a size bigger than a twin bed, twin size mattress.
Well, see, here's the thing.
Look at this thing.
I mean, but here's the thing with big TVs, and I'm kind of moving this because I used to be a big screen TV guy, and I still am. You know, I like big screen TVs. We got like a 65-incher, and I like the big TVs. Except here's the thing: I was sitting there the one day in my theater chair, which is in front of the 65-inch TV, which the TV is maybe, you know, 10 feet away, give or take, from where the chair is. And we're watching the ball game. Mm. And on my this is a 15-inch laptop, 15-inch MacBook Pro, sitting on my lap. And I pulled up MLB TV, and I'm watching a second game on my laptop, which is sitting on my lap, and it's perfectly clear, you know, nice picture. And I look down at the screen, and then I look up at the big TV, and I look down at the laptop screen, and I look up at the big screen TV, and it occurs to me, the laptop screen is actually bigger than the 65-inch. So, yeah, it's like a 65-inch TV, like 10 feet away, is going to be smaller than a 15-inch screen on your lap.
So that's a good observation.
Right, because it's like, okay, why does, you know, not everybody, you know, the big screen, I guess, if you're enjoying something with a lot of people, great.
Right.
But even if it's like, okay, say it's just my wife and I watching a movie, well, if we could just each have our own screen in front of us, and, you know, the sound could still come out of the speakers the way it does, but you'd be getting the same experience with a 15-inch screen on your lap than you do a 65-inch screen 10 feet away.
Right.
It's like you got to understand. I mean, that's when it used to be, it was when you couldn't pack these pixels that close, and you couldn't look at anything that close, but these devices they're coming out with now. With these, you know, like the Retina displays and these, you know, the 4K displays. And there's just so many pixels in a small area that everything is so vivid and lifelike that you can sit here and look at these screens a couple feet away and they look, you know, they look awesome.
Right.
I mean, I'm just still convinced TVs are going to be gone in a matter of years because, you know, forget 3D TV. Soon it's just, you know, there's no reason why you're not going to have some kind of glasses you just slip over, you know, and you can enjoy a 100-inch screen floating in front of you. And there's just a little, you know, glasses going around.
Yeah.
That'd be great, though. Personal entertainment, you know? You're just like, hey, imagine the porn on that. This is realistic, man.
And nobody else knows it's on.
Right. There you go. You can just sit it, and, you know, on the bus or the train. Nobody knows what you're doing. Nobody
and when the women are yelling harder, harder, you're trying to convince them that you're watching a repeat of the women's Olympic curling team.
Right. I know you like curling. I don't know what you kind of have an unnatural desire to. It was the Canadian women too. I think you had something.
Yes.
For the Canadian the Canadian curlers. They have a swimsuit
the Canadian
calendar.
Curlers.
Right. You want to look that up. They have a swimsuit. Right. The CanadianCurlers.com. You want their swimsuit calendar. The Shark highly recommends it.
NakedCurling.com.
That sounds dangerous.
It does.
That sounds.
You know, ice and heavy weights do not go together.
No, you wouldn't think they were. That's a sport, you know. Hey, there you go. That is absolutely positively true.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, you like curling? I prefer baseball, but if you like curling, I mean, although, you know, I'm not going to get a baseball swimsuit calendar. I don't want to see, you know, Grady packing his banana into the hammock.
Packing the banana into the marble bag.
Right. No, thank you. No thank you at all for that, and we can now move on.
Well, you were talking about hiding at the store, and I thought of when I was at Toys R Us, the one place you don't want to hide is the aisle that leads from the storeroom to the straight shot to go from the storeroom in the back all the way to the front where the cash registers are. Because every time something comes out, these guys are so busy usually around the holidays. It's like, oh, can you go run me and get me that? Can you get this over here? Oh, by the way, that customer needs help over there. That is the worst place to stand. It's like, if you're going to hide, don't go anywhere near that aisle.
Right. Well, see, we used to hide. There was actually a little waiting room for Circuit City had the 12-volt shop, you know, where people came, got their car stereos or whatever, you know, speakers or alarms and any of that stuff installed into their car. Right. There was the little room that had a couple of vending machines. It wasn't our break room. We had a full break room. This was for it was a small room. I mean, it was maybe like 10 by 10 with the vending machines. And that's where the bathrooms were. And there was a little table and like four chairs sitting there. That was basically all that would fit in that area. But that's where the people for 12-volt would go sit. Mm. And you had two exits. Well, actually, you had multiple exits because, one, you could bolt into the bathroom. Two, you could go out the front door, which led into the appliance department at the store. Or you could go out the back door, which led you through the garage where they were installing the car stereos, but then you could hit the quick right, make it into the car stereo department. So there were multiple exits. So as long as a manager didn't come back into that section, or as long as you got out in time, you could hide back there for a long time. Customers would never find you.
Right.
And we used to play games. I mean, there's like, you make bad choices when you work retail. Because there was this one time that they had these, spray, air freshener kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea why, but the one guy decided he was going to start like spraying this fellow employee. So a little war broke out, right? Right. Well, he like goes around the one door and sprays and ends up getting a customer. Needless to say, the war ended very quickly for that particular employee.
Well, we used to sell those, this like a flying saucer, like about 10, 20, I don't know how many years ago. It had like a Mylar balloon,
yes,
that type of material, and then the ring. And it would, you know, the way you throw it up, kind of like that styrofoam plane of the 70s would,
right,
like do a loop.
Those were awesome.
Well, yeah. So this thing would go, you know, up. Well, the manager was by the door playing around with it, and he's like, why should I have somebody else have all the fun? So he's throwing this thing up, and well, he's getting carried away with it, and it made a loop over his head. The customer walks in the door, hits the customer in the back of the head. They're like, oh, sorry.
So
like,
sorry. What toy would you like for each today?
Yeah.
But I guess be happy. You know what? There's enough stories working in that type of an environment, Circuit City, Radio Shack, even Silo, which existed here for a small time in Chicago. I guess I'm just really glad I never had to do like McDonald's, Taco Bell, because
right,
I don't think I could have handled that.
Right.
I don't think that would have been anywhere near as fun. Although, you know, then somebody could have called the police if I didn't get their sauce right.
Well, but you said something about like keeping it more simple, you know, like, was it Chipotle where you have the, you know, the, I think three different sections of what you want and it moves the line through, because I remember a few years ago, there was that show about, you know, some kind of like a restaurant competition, like these people were pitching their restaurant dreams. One guy had like a meatball sub place. One lady had some special noodles. One guy had barbecue.
Hey, I bet she had some special noodles.
Thank you. And it wasn't just about their food. It was about the whole idea of their concept of the restaurant. And then, you know, they would have different competitions and put them with the live public to, you know, do like get like a Taste of Chicago type thing where all the vendors are out there.
Right. You do a contest.
Yeah, they would compete against each other like that. Well, the problem they found was this one lady, she had really good food, but it was way too her menu had like over 100 items on it, way too confusing for fast food. People can't sit there and check out the menu in their hand. They got to go now, now, now. And it's like, well, I don't want to look like an idiot, so I don't want, right, to read all that stuff. Goodbye.
Right. Simplicity is key. And it follows over to just about anything you can do in life. Being a web designer, I constantly run into people who want a, you know, extremely complex, crazy ass website that makes noise and squirts around and does every weird thing in the book. It's like, but why? Well, I don't know. We can, right? Well, yeah, but what are your customers looking for? I don't know. Well, see, there's your biggest problem. You know, the same thing with this, what you're talking about. You know, somebody wants to come in. They want to be able to order their sandwich. They want to get it out the door. That doesn't want to be a five-step process. They don't want to feel like, you know, they don't know what to order. And, you know, I'm the same way, especially if you know you're going to a place that has a drive-through.
Right.
You know, and if I haven't been there in a while, it's great. If you go to McDonald's every week, you can show up and be like, yeah, quarter pound with cheese fries. You know, okay, and you know what you want. But if you're going someplace you've never been or you haven't been in a while, it's like, I'll look it up on the website because I don't want to get to that, you know, that little speaker and be like, Aaron, can I help you there? And you're like, I'd like, yeah, do your burgers, like, do they come with, like, stuff on them, or, you know, it's like, you don't want to be that guy,
right,
and it's always worse when you're behind somebody like that, because you're like, oh, my God, part of your fucking food,
right,
but, yeah, I'm going to call 911.
I'm going to throw my nuggets through the window at the drive-thru.
Oh, you see that, too? People think it's okay to accost the nice people at the drive-thru.
There was that video that went around the internet. Lady was attacking the drive-thru. She's climbing through the window.
She wasn't going to fit. She was not going to fit. Bad life choices 101.
Bad life choices.
Right. Badlifechoices.com. There's a show in there somewhere. There's absolutely a show in there somewhere. You know, and then we're gonna start putting some new segments into the show. And, you know, a couple different things we've been talking about, and I think maybe that should be one of them. Bad life choices, you know, because it's always like somebody doing something. You know, there was a story on Lifehacker the other day to where this girl in it was like South Carolina. It was somewhere southern. I think it was like South Carolina, Virginia. That was homeschooled. She's like a senior. And like went to the there was like a homeschooled prom, which I had no idea that even existed. Mm. And it was only like a $25 ticket to get into the homeschooled prom, at which point I'm going, what the hell can you buy for $25? I mean, we went to prom 1988, right? And it was like $75 or $100, right?
Oh, easy. Yeah, it was $100 at least, I remember.
You know, so it's like, what could you get for a $25 prom? You should have realized right then and there that the homeschool prom was going to be crap.
At somebody's home.
Right. It should be, It should be at somebody's home. You know, wherever it was at, whatever, you know, VFW hall, whatever it was. You know, this chick was blonde. I guess she was fairly tall. And the only dress code was that the dresses that the girls wear had to be fingertip length, which to me adds a whole new question as to what if the girl didn't have hands?
Hey.
But let's just forget about that. She found a dress that was fingertip length, but it looked very short on her. So I guess they started hassling. The people that are running the prom started hassling her about it. And they're like, your dress is too short. And she's like, well, what was the rule? And the woman's like, well, the rule is it's fingertip length. She puts her arms down to her sides as flat as they'll go and go, well, yeah, but it's still too short. It's like, okay, you decided to make this rule. You're the one that made the rule fingertip length, and you didn't say it had to be X amount above the knee, whatever. You said fingertip length, so if this was within that rule, you know, I would think you know, there's really not much you could do. But then, you know, so she goes back to her friends and they're complaining she was dancing inappropriately. She's like, I wasn't even dancing. And then it came down to like it was, and again, you could tell this comes from, and I'm a good Irish Catholic boy, so I can say this. It came from one of these, you know, ultra religious areas, obviously.
Oh,
because they actually came up to her and they're like, because I guess there was like a area upstairs where, you know, if you brought your parents along that they could watch, which I don't remember having a parent viewing area in our prom.
Oh, God.
Thank the Lord. And pass the ammunition, because I don't remember having a parent viewing area. Well, I guess it came down to where it's like, yeah, the some of the dads, you know, they're kind of, it was kind of like they're having unpure thoughts because of the way you're dressed.
That's nice.
And it's like, so they were going to kick her out. And she's like, well, give me a refund. And they're like, no. And she's like, give me a refund. And they're like, okay. And then it's like, well, then you have to give my boyfriend a refund. Well, no, only you. And they're like, fuck you. Four of us came together. If you're kicking me out, they've got the fucking car. You have to give us all a refund. So they said, okay, we'll just go out front. We'll get you the refunds. And they didn't bring the fucking refunds.
Nice.
I'm like, what kind of a bunch of douchebags that would do that? It's like, you know, one, why are there fathers watching? Is this something we could do? Maybe we could make money at this. Could we sell tickets to, like, watch proms?
Well, yeah, like those boots at the old porno place. Where you
right, there we go.
Like toilet paper and a door handle when you go in there.
It's a whole new thing. Now this is just like, watch the prom as it happens.
And then you have to keep putting quarters in for the screen to stay up.
Right. See teen girls moments before they're defiled by their boyfriends on prom night. You know, I mean, this is what it kind of sounded like to me, because it's like, I don't remember having a viewing area above for adults to watch while we were having prom in high school. So I don't know how they do it in the South, but it seems like they do it in a very weird way.
They just want to be upfront about it. We don't need any of these bathroom cams or locker room cams. No, none of that. Let's put a big, you know, viewing area with huge windows up there.
Right. So the dads can watch. Hey, no. Take your hands off.
Guy in the red tie, get your hand off my daughter's ass.
That would be awesome, though, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be awesome? Because you're a father with a daughter. Now you're thinking, this seems like a great idea where dads could just, like, walk up to a microphone, which echoes throughout the whole prom.
Yes.
So when your daughter's date's hands go a little bit too low, is this thing on? Hey, Junior, get your hands off my daughter's ass.
And then have like chainsaw noises and shotguns being, you know, ready to be loaded.
Well, see, there's nothing better than that. I mean, do you own a gun?
No.
See, you should. Because even if it's not a real gun, just something that you could have, like, on the, I think that's the perfect way when your daughter has a boyfriend come over for the first time and then introduces him to you, that you're sitting at, like, the kitchen table cleaning a Glock.
You're I have a vast knife collection and Chinese star collection.
Right. It's like, you're going to have her own by 9 o'clock, right? Yes, sir, I am.
Did you ever see how fast I could open a butterfly knife?
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure I do. I'm going to make sure she gets home right in time. But that's the perfect way to do it. You got to scare them straight, man.
Well, I remember a Chicago one of my friends had a dad as a Chicago cop, and whenever he would take, you know, knives and such things off of criminals, he'd give them to his son. We were all going to Catholic school. Well, then he would turn around and sell them to us. So that was
when he would take weapons off of criminals, he would give them to his teenage son.
He's like, hey, did you, you know, people had those switchblade combs in like grammar school, high school, something.
What kind of grammar school did you go to where kids had switchblade combs?
But this guy opened up a real switchblade, and I'm like, hey,
dude, can I borrow your comb?
I thought those were illegal. He's like, my dad's a cop.
So nothing's illegal at that point.
I'm like, all right.
I guess you got the Dutch reach around right there. I guess you're not getting in any trouble whatsoever.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, have a nice day.
Have a nice day. Let me take one of those switchblades. You never know when I'm going to need it. Just don't try to bring it in through the TSA or they're going to get very upset with you.
I mean, we take, you know, if somebody bought a new refrigerator, TV, whatever, came in that big cardboard box, and we'd put a few of them, like layers of it together, and throw like the Chinese stars at it and stuff. We draw a human, you know, like you have it like a gun range,
right.
And then try and see if we get it to the person's head or chest or whatever. It's like we didn't even realize how dangerous this was, but we were fine.
Right. This now seems like fun.
Now it's like your child needs a bicycle helmet. Throwing Chinese stars.
Right. That's how the world has changed. Now your kids need a helmet if they want to get on a bike or they want to get on a skateboard. They got to wear knee pads, elbow pads. They got to pad everything up. Yeah, you're right. When we were kids, it was like we're throwing around Chinese stars. We're jumping off shit. You know, we're jumping crap with our bike. We're building like ramps like this was safe to do.
There was a trick store. I don't know if you remember it.
Riley's?
And I think it was Izzy Rizzy's, and they would sell a lot of the Chinese stars and other stuff. And I remember buying this really cool looking dagger with a skull on the top, and I'm like, "Oh, that's cool!" And the guy's like, "You're not going to kill anybody, are you?" And I'm like, I mean to myself, "Okay, even if I were, would I say that?" Yes, sir. I am.
Right. That's the plan, sir. Is it sharp enough? Can I get right through the carotid with this? Just want to make sure. Want to be sure I'm ready. Want it to be a cool knife. If you're going to kill somebody, you may as well do it with a skull on there and everything. It's like shows I'm serious.
It's like maybe there should be a waiting period. You know, like, I want
like
a gun.
For guns, right.
Right. Well, you know, but I'm mad now.
Right. Well, see, that's the interesting thing. I mean, the first time I shot a gun, it was, you know, it was only within the last few years. And, you know, you think there's going to be, you know, I don't know if you want to say more to it, but, you know, once you start, like, pounding off those rounds, especially if you start with something small, like a little .22, you know, then moved up to a 9mm, you know, when you shoot something like a .45, you know, it's got a kick, okay?
Right.
That was like, okay, I understand this is like Dirty Harry range. You know, there's a kick. It's a real thing. It's a powerful thing. But for me, I mean, I'm a big guy, like 6'6", like 280 pounds with a, you know, with a 9mm, and especially like a 22 was like a toy. I mean, my hands didn't even move when you're just like, choo, 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 choo. You know, it's like this is like a pea shooter.
Wow.
You know, and the 9mm wasn't much different than that. And it's like, oh, well, then, you start putting two and two together that the, you know, the little holes in that silhouette that you're pulling back, it's like, ooh, that would have killed somebody.
Yeah.
You know, all I did was go, choo, 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 choo. Then it's like, they're dead.
Right.
But to me, I mean, that's, you know, we don't have time to go into a whole, you know, anti-gun, pro-gun, you know, debate. But for me, when you realize what percentage of crime victims are women with the sexual assaults that go on against women, arm them. You know, I have no problem. You know, women should be able to carry a 9mm in their purse to where, you know, hey, if somebody jumps them, that, you know, they can get to that weapon and defend themselves. Again, because, you know, I know we've talked about this in a show before. It's like, again, I'm a big guy. It's like there's, you know, I'm 6 foot six, you know, close to 300 pounds. It's like, you know, if I wanted to grab some, you know, 5 foot five chick off the street that weighed like 100 pounds, like, do you think she's got any chance in hell of fighting that off?
Right.
You know, it's like, give them guns for when the bad people are around. It's like, that's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, I saw a meme like that the other day, you know, where it's like, okay, there's, you know, people slamming, you know, coming through the front door, you know, like gangsters to come, you know, beat the crap out of you. It's like, would you rather have a 9mm in your hand or dial 911?
Right.
I don't know. I'll take the gun.
Yeah, because right now 911's busy because somebody's complaining about the sauce.
My sauce ain't right.
And there's full circle for you.
There's full circle. Yeah. If you want to get in touch with us, mailbag at mancaveconfidential.com. Go to the website, mancaveconfidential.com. Tell your friends to listen to the show or we will find you and we will kill you. On Twitter, we are Mancave Guys at Twitter. You can tweet us there. We don't really tweet, so we should.
Maybe you could tell us what the...
Right.
Our Twitter handle.
Right. If you know our Twitter handle, please give us a call at the hotline, which is
918. Go ahead.
918-928-CAVE, is it?
Yes, it is.
Hey, we got one of them right. Until next time, I am Darren O'Neill.
And I'm FJ Sharp.
Ciao.
Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
Ain't that the truth?